this has been just a bungled mess. So enough is enough.
The return of the Ferry Tustamina to service is delayed yet again. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, July 26. Good evening. I'm Steve Heimel. Also tonight, a Bethel native takes over the federal subsistence program in Alaska.
The kids are happy as long as their hands are greasy and their face is greasy, and they really don't mind whether they're dry fish or smoked fish, a chum, a king, a red.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
State troopers say a 48-year-old village police officer in the northwest Alaska village of Buckland was shot by a man bringing banned alcohol to the village by boat. Lauren P. Geary was flown to Anchorage for treatment after the shooting early this morning. Geary's listed now in fair condition at the Native Medical Center. Gary A. Ballett of Buckland was arrested on charges of attempted murder and alcohol importation. The sale and importation of alcohol are banned in Buckland. Troopers say Geary had received a report that Ballett was traveling to Buckland with alcohol in the boat. According to troopers, Geary went to the beach and met Ballett, who got out of the boat and shot the officer. Locals took the gun away. Poor workmanship and subpar materials are being used in the repair of the Alaska State Ferry Tustamina and once again have delayed its return to service. At this point, according to Marine Highway spokesman Jeremy Woodrow, there's no telling how long this latest delay will keep the Tusty from going back in the water.
Right now, we don't have a timeline for exactly how long it will take for them to redo those repairs. So at this time, we've canceled sailings for the Tustamina through September. It's on hold indefinitely until we have a better idea when it will be available.
The Tustamina had entered the Seward Ship's dry dock in November for scheduled maintenance and was originally set to return to service in April. After several delays, it was supposed to sail this month, but shoddy welds did not pass Coast Guard inspection. Poor welds and inferior materials caused the latest inspection failure. Kodiak Mayor Pat Branson is not happy.
This has been just a bungled mess. We're being underserved, and it's affected our community greatly. So enough is enough.
Major work on the Tustamina hasn't been done at Seward Ship's dry dock since 1999, and Woodrow said the state will keep the latest Tusty experience in mind in the future.
When the Marine Highway System puts out a vessel for a bid with work of this magnitude, it definitely will be considered moving forward.
Woodrow says the Marine Highway System has received numerous complaints from communities about the lack of service. While Homer and Kodiak have been getting limited calls from the ferry Kennicott, that vessel's too large to serve smaller towns like Port Lyons, Yuzinki, and Old Harbor. Meanwhile, the communities on the Alaska Peninsula haven't seen a ferry since May. Woodrow says system managers are hoping to release a revised schedule for Homer, Kodiak, the Alaska Peninsula communities, and Unalaska soon. In the meantime, he says the delays are costing Seward Ship's dry dock $20,000 a day. Five months after the company suddenly pulled its operations out of the southern Kenai Peninsula, Grant Aviation is facing a lawsuit from the city of Homer. As KBBI's Aaron Selbig reports, Grant owes the city about $20,000 in unpaid bills.
Grant Aviation had only been operating out of Homer for about 3 years when they abruptly left in February. Homer City Manager Walt Reedy says the city was very surprised to hear the news.
We thought that things were going well for them here. We found out about them leaving through the newspaper. They didn't contact us ahead of time to let us know. They didn't make any effort to say, hey, gee, you know, for whatever reason, we need to, you know, cease our operations in Homer. Can we get out of the lease or negotiate our way out of the lease? Or you know, amend it in any way, and we sure would have been open to those kind of conversations, but they never happened.
Grant also pulled out of Valdez in February under similar circumstances. Reedy says the company owes the city of Homer about $20,000 in back rent for its spot at the Homer Airport. He says the company was 4 or 5 months behind on rent when it pulled out of town. Reedy says that after several unsuccessful attempts to get in touch with officials from Grant Aviation, the city is now preparing a lawsuit against them to reclaim the money.
They've been unresponsive, so they're leaving us with little choice.
Representatives from Grant Aviation did not respond to requests for comment for this story. The company's been operating in Alaska since 1971. According to its website, Grant currently owns a fleet of 20 small aircraft operating in several Alaska communities, including Anchorage, Kenai, Bethel, Dillingham, and Dutch Harbor. Reedy says the city of Homer has yet to file its lawsuit, and he's still holding out hope that it won't come to that.
You know, we're really hoping that we can resolve that without a lawsuit, but the company has been unresponsive so far, and that's been really disappointing.
Homer is not the only city that has had to take Grant to court over unpaid bills. In February, the city of Kenai secured a judgment in district court for more than $56,000 in terminal lease payments and landing fees that were owed by Grant. Scott Bloom is the city attorney for Kenai. He says that since that judgment, Grant has been making installment payments on the money owed, but they are still behind. Reporting from Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
Crews have now removed most of the fuel from a tug and barge that ran aground 60 miles southeast of Cordova on Wednesday. According to the Coast Guard, Alaska Marine Services has offloaded 1,700 gallons of diesel fuel from the Hook Point Alaganik since yesterday, 225 gallons of hydraulic oil and other miscellaneous paint, solvents, and other containers were also removed. State Department of Environmental Conservation State On-Scene Coordinator Stephen Russell says the next phase of recovery efforts is to salvage the vessel.
If it's possible in the salvage operations, that fuel and other petroleum products can be incorporated into that salvage effort, that the salvage boats take that fuel or they come back and get it at a later time, whatever the case may be.
The boat was on a tsunami debris cleanup project 60 miles southeast of Cordova when it encountered heavy waves, strong currents, and icebergs from the mouth of the Seal River. Coast Guard spokesperson Lieutenant Ali Furco says the currents caused the vessel to swing broadside into the waves, lift up, and then come down on the large pieces of ice.
And that impact broke the mechanical system that was holding the tug and barge together, and both washed up on the beach.
Furco says both people on board, who were wearing survival suits at the time, abandoned the ship. They made it safely to shore with help from a shoreside cleanup crew. The area is quite remote near Cape Yakutaga. Icebergs are not uncommon there. They come off the huge Bering Glacier and through the Seal River when the tide's right. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a culture camp in Southeast that addresses a serious health concern.
We led the state in suicides. The state led the nation in suicides. So where did that put us? It put us at the top of a pyramid.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com.
And by
Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
The state is offering a large timber sale in the Tok area. The 25-year Division of Forestry contract is for harvest of 700 to 900 acres a year of primarily smaller diameter black and white spruce. Tok area forester Jeff Hermans says the sale was partially inspired by two local businesses, Alaska Power and Telephone and Young's Timber, that are interested in biomass energy
to replace all of their diesel-generated electricity. And the second reason is that, you know, for quite some time now, we've been trying to focus on efforts on how we can reduce the threat of wildfire to Tok.
Herman says the state's hazardous fuel reduction objective would be achieved in the first 5 years of biomass timber sale.
We're doing what Mother Nature would do with a large wildfire without the danger of burning down the community here. So, and, you know, hopefully, again, you know, the resource that would be harvested would be used to either generate electricity and or densified wood products that would help the energy demand, you know, either here in Tok or throughout the interior here.
Herman says an additional benefit of the sale is saving $4 million currently sent out of the Tok area to purchase fuel oil in town.
Even if they spend half of that amount to purchase biomass, that money would stay local and would be for out harvesting and converting that over into energy to generate electricity and other products.
Herman says that's potentially profound economic impact for a community where the seasonal peak population is 2,000 people. Bidding on the Tok biomass timber sale closes August 20th. A lifelong Bethel resident will run the federal government's subsistence program in Alaska. KYUK's Angela Denning Barnes reports from Bethel.
Gene Peltola Jr., also known as Buzzy, has resigned from running the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge based in Bethel. He has taken a promotion and is moving to Anchorage to become the Assistant Regional Director for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He will head the subsistence program at the Office of Subsistence Management. Peltola, who is Yupik and was born and raised in Bethel, says subsistence is near and dear to his heart. He knew he wanted to work in this type of job since the seventh grade.
My father and my mother raised me hunting, fishing, and trapping and such, going out in the outdoors.
Right now, he says there are a lot of subsistence issues like poor Chinook or king salmon runs all over the state that have to be addressed. He believes that conservation is part of the solution and says it will take a little personal sacrifice like focusing on other species.
When it comes down to it, you know, the kids are happy as long as their hands are greasy and their face is greasy, and they really don't mind whether they're dry fish or smoked fish, a chum, a king, a red, you know, or, you know, kippered silvers.
Peltola has been working for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for 29 years, since a few days after he graduated from Bethel Regional High School. He's run the Yukon Delta Refuge for 5 years. At over 19 million acres, it's the second largest wildlife refuge in the country, known as a breeding ground for hundreds of species of birds. Because Peltola is moving out of town, he must also resign from being Bethel's vice mayor on the Bethel City Council. Peltola's position at the wildlife refuge will be advertised soon. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
A Southeast Alaska Native Corporation and a conservation group are combining forces to try to spur sustainable regional development. They're funding a business plan contest aimed at, but not limited to, the area's smaller communities. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
It's no secret Southeast Alaska has had its share of economic problems. They've hit villages and small cities especially hard.
Our focus has to be on providing opportunities for families and residents to remain in these rural communities.
That's Russell Dick, president and CEO of Ha'ani LLC. It's a subsidiary of the Juneau-based Sea Alaska Regional Native Corporation. Ha'ani has a nonprofit community development fund. It's partnering with the Nature Conservancy on a competition called Path to Prosperity.
This is really a program about creating entrepreneurship, creating business, creating economic development in a way that, you know, utilizes our natural resources within the communities to sustain lifestyles.
The contest will collect proposals from Southeast residents, businesses, and tribal entities. A dozen finalists will be brought to Juneau for a weekend boot camp to learn about business development and plan writing. Norm Cohen is Southeast Program Director for the Nature Conservancy. The international organization supports environmentally friendly, small-scale development projects.
Our sort of theory of change is that there are other uses of forest products and activities that can take place in the forest that can be a strong economic opportunity that will last for a long period of time without jeopardizing sort of the use for future generations.
Two contest winners in each of three rounds will receive up to $40,000 in consulting and technical services. Sea Alaska has a lot of naysayers. One is Juno shareholder Brad Flitch. He's a private financial manager and moderator of the 4,400-member Facebook site Sea Alaska Shareholders.
It's a business competition because the management of Ha'ani is completely devoid of ideas, comprehension, or ability to manage a business.
Flitch says he's proposed village commercial ventures such as harvesting berries, growing peonies for the wedding flower market, and collecting wild mushrooms.
There's 11 varieties of commercial mushrooms that could be easily harvested in Southeast. Written up entire business plan for Sea Alaska. This is how you make money on our land, creating jobs in our communities.
Dick says he's aware of the proposals and they could be submitted to the competition or considered separately. Competition organizers will offer an informational webinar August 12th. The deadline for the first round of proposals is about a month later. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting in Juneau.
Come on, I got a monkey around. Come on, I got a monkey. Ooh, we got a monkey around.
Those are the sounds from a rehearsal of Seussical, the musical. The Dr. Seuss-themed show takes to the stage in Sitka today and tomorrow. A group of high school students and recent graduates from around the country have spent the last 2 weeks putting the show together as part of the Sitka Fine Arts Camp's musical theater session. The musical relies on contributions from 18 of Dr. Seuss's books, from the well-known Green Eggs and Ham to the less famous, McElligot's Pool. KCAW's Ed Runco reports.
On a big stage in Sitka for 2 weeks in July, a group of young actors are asked by a guy, can it be more exciting? Can that note be a long one? Can we try it with music?
Could it be now cartoon fun?
That's the director. His name is McCrae, and he's teaching and helping as he has been all day. He says watching them learn is nothing but thrilling. He's seen them come far.
And that's really fulfilling.
But does he have fun or just get left flat?
It's a tough time of day to ask me that.
In the late afternoon, a rehearsal just passed, McCrae says he's joking, that he's
having a blast.
Then there are students working day after day. It can be
very stressful, but in a good way.
Megan Wright is an actor, and her part's tough to sell because
all of the lines are rhyming as well.
Wright plays the part of a famous Seuss cat who's known for some mischief and a
fabulous hat.
This process is hard, all the lines and the quipping, but she's done Hairspray and Annie.
Now at home, I'm in Pippin.
There's wattage on stage in all of these parts as they act with their bodies and sing with their hearts. There are two kinds of musicals you might or not know. The kind with big stars who
kind of carry the show.
But this one is different, says Andrew Hames. It's an ensemble piece, and he sits and he names a handful of characters who each hold some clout, which means lots of them
get to be featured throughout.
If you're wondering whether this show is for you, it most likely is, says the cast and the crew. Seuss wrote for kids, but for adults, it's no leap.
It's family-friendly, but it's also very deep.
I hope you'll forgive me for using this voice, but when dealing with Seuss, one hasn't much choice. I promise I won't make the rhyming a habit. Reporting in Sitka, Ed Ronco, Dag Nabbit.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. The Alaska Nanook Commission reminds you that harassing polar bears or taking polar bears with cubs is not only illegal, but it is not part of native traditions. Together with their management partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Nanook Commission has been working on developing a long-term polar bear deterrence plan to protect Alaska's villages from dangerous polar bear encounters. More at thealaskanannookcommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission, Alaska's people managing Alaska's resources.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Ed Ronco. This week on AK, Culture Camp, the organized village of Cake. is a small tribal community on the northwest side of Kupernaw Island. Like many villages this time of year, they just hosted a culture camp, a week of teaching Native youth about traditional food gathering and preserving. And during the week of fun, they're also addressing a big health issue, suicide. KCAW's Eric Newman has the story.
My name is Kaush. That's my Tlingit name. My Haida name is Iljawas. And my IRS name is Michael Jackson.
Mike Jackson is an imposing man who speaks slowly and thoughtfully. He doesn't show much body language so that you can't really tell what he's thinking sometimes. Jackson was born in Cake and lived here for most of his life. In town, he's the magistrate judge. But on this day, he's at a beach, helping supervise 24 middle and high school kids at the Cake Culture Camp.
Now, the benefits of, say, seal. The oils are good for us. Blueberries is very, very good for us, as well as salmon berries, huckleberries. If you want to keep me talking, here are beach greens. You can eat that right here.
Jackson helped found the camp 25 years ago. During their week-long stay, kids learned how to make Devil's Club tea and to dress seal and bear. During the time I was there, I ate dog salmon eggs and seaweed and smoked hooligan, little fish where you eat everything, from head to tail. Cake's camp centers around food, but there's also a larger issue.
We led the state in suicides, the state led the nation in suicides, so where did that put us? It put us at the top of a pyramid.
In the 1980s, Cake had the most suicides in America, particularly youth suicides. That's when Jackson and others decided to start the culture camp. Since then, many kids have participated.
My name is Nikki Friday. I've been coming to culture camp all my life. I've been coming here since kindergarten, because that's the youngest I could get. I've been coming since then, and I've never missed a year.
Friday is 17. He looks like a typical high schooler who's into the arts. He has bleached hair, and he likes theater and music. He wants to become an actor.
Most of the times I like to act, put on some small plays, get some people, get a little theater stage going on.
He's one of 24 campers here. I asked Friday what his favorite thing is so far.
Getting the fish, cutting them open, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yep, just basically cutting the ribs off of the bones.
Yep.
Or the meat. Filet them up, put them in the smokehouse. We've mainly worked on pinks, a couple of kings, and halibut, coho.
Food prices are high here, and there's significant unemployment, making life difficult for many in Cake. But the real reason for the camp is to rebuild the native culture and traditions of residents here. Martha Pearson is a health program manager with the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, SEARCH.
The culture camp does operate on one level, which is just, hey, here's how we, you know, smoke salmon, here's how we gather berries, and we're going to eat these great foods for this whole week, and that's going to be healthy. That's one level. I think the deeper and more sustainable level is, I keep coming upon the word resiliency. The residents report that there have been no suicides in the village since the culture camp began.
I double-checked with Mike Jackson, and it was 22 years since the last suicide. So within a few years, Cake went from the most suicides in the country to none. Jackson stresses that this is the main benefit of camp, among many.
We're trying to encourage them even more to get back to the natural foods because of the diabetes issues that's going on throughout the U.S. with Native Americans. And if we can make that more them more aware, that's our culture camp. But we will never sleep on any idea of saying that we're going away from suicide prevention. Our first priority out here is suicide prevention.
And Nikki Friday, he's looking to the future.
I am going to go to college in New York.
He says he's not totally sure how the lessons from culture camp will translate to life in the city. But making that transition might just be enough. Reporting in Cake, I'm Eric Newman.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading off to the tiny village of Tanacross in Interior Alaska.
I'm Diane Titus. I work with the school, Tanacross School. My dad told me, he said the first Tanacross, it was supposed to be like a post, you know, like a trader's post. They called it Tanana Crossing. It's 2 miles off the Alaska Highway. There's a lot of trees, a nice view of the Alaska Range. Now we're in the new village. We're not in that old village where we first used to be. The old village is right across the river. Then we moved across to the new village in 74. When we used to live in the old village, we had to get in the boat and then get into the car to get to anywhere. So it was a little harder. In the summer, the village usually has various jobs, more jobs than we do in the winter. Berry picking, cultural camps, fishing, a lot of subsistence. And people usually go out in family groups and go together to do this, to gather the food. Usually children are involved in that, and at the same time, they're being taught to how to preserve. Unemployment is high. Pretty much most of them are subsistence because they don't have a job in the winter, so that's why it's so important to put the food away, you know. It's just a little peaceful village where people try to work together when we need to.
Diane Titus works with the Tanacross School. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Eric Newman, David Waldron, Sarah Bernard, and Annie Feit. I'm Ed Ronco.
Thank you so much, Ed. That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jay Barrett in Kodiak, Aaron Sulbig in Homer, Tony Gorman in Valdez, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and batting cleanup Ed Ronco in Sitka. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer, Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Steve Heimel.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Crowley, celebrating 60 years in Alaska. Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com.
And by
Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.